Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, hello. I've been gone a while, but your other genial host, Tony Black, is back alongside regular guest Steve Norman to talk a melee of film, TV and music news. First up, dinosaurs. We haven't seen Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, but we wonder if nostalgia will make this sequel a hit. Next up, football. We talk Steve's look at Mike Bassett, England manager, and predict some World Cup 2018 scores. In our TV section, we tease our upcoming review of Netflix's Luke Cage Season 2, which we got a sneak preview of, before deep diving into Sky's phenomenon Westworld. Can Tony describe it to Steve and make any sense? Finally, in free play, after a few weeks' holiday, Matt Latham returns with his cassette tape section, and on the subject of music, we talk London's Royal Albert Hall and movie screenings with an orchestra. New craze or just new fad? That's enough anyway of the preamble. Let's do this, shall we? Okay, starting as usual, we're talking about movies, and basically we haven't seen anything, have we, Steve? Really, we haven't.
No.
We get off to a good start with this. Neither of us have seen the big new hitter right now, which is Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. Did you see the last one?
I did, yes.
Yeah, because I'm hearing it's not as good.
I didn't think much of it. Jurassic World, the first installment of the reboot of the sequels.
Just describing it makes you go, oh.
Yeah.
I know. I wasn't in love with it either, I think, you know. And I mean, our writer Les Pitt has reviewed it on Set the Tape, so, you know, have a look at what he said. But you must have been a big Jurassic Park fan, I'm guessing, back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt, yeah. It was one of my favourite films growing up, and it's still one of probably my favourite blockbuster type films, you know, films of that ilk. It stands up really well now. I mean, the effects don't look they don't look dated. They look good. It looks, you know, it's still kind of everything you want from a film of that type. And I think even without the nostalgia effect, if I was to be watching it now for the first time, I'd be probably just as into it.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing, isn't it? The nostalgia, like, because, you know, everything right now, I mean, when you think about all the big summer blockbuster films, you know, we've had Solo recently, which I know you're a big Star Wars fan, so you've seen that. I haven't seen it yet. We've had Solo, we've got Jurassic World, we've got Mission Impossible 6 coming in a few weeks, you know. I mean, even something like Ocean's 8, which is fair, you know, nostalgic for like 10, 15 years ago when the Ocean's films were coming out. Then all this, you know, you've got a lot of films right now that are really tapping back into stuff that people loved years ago. So do you think something like Jurassic World 2 will benefit from that, really?
It's hard. I mean, obviously, a lot of people are going to see Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. It seems that every kind of blockbuster, big-budget film has to now try and set up a franchise or a sequel. It can't just be a standalone film We're seeing it even with stuff like Independence Day. I'm half expecting it to be an Armageddon sequel where we find out that Bruce Willis didn't actually die on the asteroid.
I kind of want that now. I kind of want that
It's everything has to tie into something. And with some films, it can work. Mission Impossible is a spy film, so you can just come up with another spy plot, that kind of thing. Some new action set pieces. And it will probably work, but with something like Jurassic World, it kind of like the first one was that different with the terms of the plot and the dinosaurs being brought back. Everyone since then, you kind of have to try and go bigger, but it just seems to be sillier or stupider or less, not less believable, because this, to be honest, we're talking about cloning dinosaurs, but just like. Doesn't make sense as much, and do you know what I mean? Weaponizing dinosaurs. It just seems to make it even more unbelievable and take something away from it. But then Solo worked. Solo was good. It was really enjoyable. I enjoyed it more than The Last Jedi. It worked, and I really didn't think it would.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, because...
So what do I know, essentially? Why are we asking me about it?
What does any of us know?
Yeah.
I think if anything, this podcast proves that. What do we know? But I think, as someone who's a massive Star Wars fan, I mean, I love Star Wars, but I'm nowhere near as big a fan as you are. You really, really love it. And I think... I was wondering about that with you, with Solo. I haven't seen it yet, but you would have gone into it with a real level of, with Han Solo, one of these great characters... from the past, you'd have gone into it with this feeling of, it's got to, surely I'm going to expect X, Y, and Z, and with Jurassic World, the majority of people who are going to watch that, a lot of people who are going to watch that are going to expect the level of Jurassic Park. And I think certainly, in terms of the reaction to Jurassic World, and from what I'm hearing about the reaction to the sequel, it's not really lived up to that in any way. And maybe the difference with Solo is that Solo was able to maybe tell a little bit of a different kind of story, whereas these Jurassic World films, it's just Jurassic Park again, isn't it, really? Just tarted up.
Yeah, that's essentially what it is. It's just Jurassic Park, a different version of Jurassic Park. It's trying to, you've always already been wowed in the original, and perhaps even the original trilogy, although the Lost World and the other one, it's probably less said about that, better. I generally can't remember the name of the third one now.
It's Jurassic just three. Park. It's just,
is it?
Yeah. It's the one without an ending. The one that literally has no last act. It just ends.
The plot in those is a bit is a bit more sensible in so much as, but what they have to do is try and better the last one. So the first one, you have obviously the initial thing of seeing these dinosaurs. As well as that, they go big. So you have Velociraptor, T-Rex, and the big long-necked ones. As much as all kids love dinosaurs, once you get past those, you're kind of scrabbling around for dinosaurs they're actually going to recognise after that. So you think, right, we get Stegosaurus and Triceratops into the next one. Right, after that, what dinosaurs do people actually know? Right, Pterodactyl, we'll get them in there then. What other dinosaurs do people know? Right, now we're just going to start inventing them.
Just pretend. Yeah, I mean, I went to the National History Museum the other week, and for the first time, and they got a big dinosaur exhibit there, and there were about three or four I recognised. I was like, T-Rex, yeah, that's the one with the horns. I can't remember the name of it now. That might be the Triceratops. I don't know. I was like, yeah, that one. But after a while, I was like, what's this? Thnakinosaurus and all this. I was like, come on, that's made up. And that's the thing. It's one of those that. The further away you move from it, the more, it kind of loses it. Or you just try and repeat the same beats, And from what a lot of people have said, that if you've seen the trailer to Fallen Kingdom, you've seen the film. And that doesn't surprise me, to be honest.
Yeah, I've not heard good things about Fallen Kingdom. I mean, for me, I've said this on different podcasts and maybe even on this one before, but the thing with Jurassic World was that it essentially... right from the get-go, right to the last scene with the T-Rex roaring out over the ruins of the theme park, was just saying, yeah, we really know the original was better than this.
Because
the T-Rex comes and saves the day, it essentially stops the big new dinosaur thing from from killing the protagonist, and then at the end the T-Rex just looks over the island and roars. So it's kind of like, well, yeah, you're just admitting that the original was better than this by doing that. So I mean, people will always go and see it. I think I think it'll take a lot for any franchise to wear so thin that people will stop seeing it. You know, it's going to take double figures worth of bad films for people to stop going to see Marvel or Star Wars or Jurassic Park World. If they make one or two bad films, people will still go back and see it the next one after that. But if it will take a lot of bad films in a row for people to really lose their love for these franchises.
It's true. I just want that Bruce Willis Armageddon sequel now, really, to be honest.
It's probably in the pipeline somewhere.
Probably. I think it'd be less ridiculous than Die Hard 5. So, you know. Speaking of films that aren't to do with dinosaurs, obviously we've got...
I'm not interested anymore, sorry.
But what if? What if I mention they're about football, Steve?
Well, there we go. That's a different matter.
I brought you back now, haven't I, to the table?
You have,
We've got, obviously, as this is released, we've got the World Cup kicking off. World Cup 2018 in Russia, which I think we're both very excited about. And another opportunity to see England do desperately bad again. But, you know, what's new? You've written a piece for Set the Tape, which is talking about one of the... I think we both agree on this, because we've talked about this before. One of the best football films ever made.
Yes, I mean, there's not a great deal to choose from. First of all, I should have written more articles on football films, but a bout of gallstones and some upcoming holidays have really paid to that. But I'm going to try and write some more throughout the duration of the World Cup.
Brilliant.
I will get them done.
No, that's all right. That's all right. You had an injury. You're on the bench, but now, you're ready to come off back into the squad and
Roy of the Rovers.
That'd be brilliant. Yes, keep an eye out, guys, for those during the World Cup season, which is going to last for roughly around the next month. And we're kicking off with Mike Bassett, England manager, which you've written a piece on, which obviously starred Ricky Tomlinson back, I think it was 2000, and Ricky Tomlinson from the Royal Family as one of the worst England managers ever. And it's like a mockumentary kind of, you know, style film, and it is just glorious, isn't it?
Well, it is parodying The Impossible Job, which was the Channel 4 documentary on Graham Taylor trying to get England to qualify for USA 94, which in itself is fantastic and ridiculous in equal measure. You know, it's just a fantastic documentary, and this is, you know, a comedic take on that, if a comedic take on that documentary was actually needed at all. But it works, because it's not just lowest common denominator football jokes, which very easily could have been. I mean, there are some of those in there, don't get me wrong, and there is slapstick and, you know, just stupidness in there, but there is a lot of clever football humour in there as well. There's a lot of, you know, taking apart what football culture was like at the time, what what people perceived of the Football Association at the time and the England team at the time and footballers at the time. It was kind of cleverer than what a lot of people perhaps thought.
Yeah, definitely. And I it's one of them. It's got layers to it, Mike Bassett. Really does. It's very clever. It's very satirical of sports and of football in particular. And, you know, it's just, and Ricky Tomlinson is just brilliant as this completely bumbling, clueless England manager who's just a calamity of a man. And it's just great. There's just so many funny gags. Like, I think, you know, obviously the Benson and Edges, two guys called up to the England squad because somebody got wrong about how it was a cigarette packet.
Yeah.
And they're two, like, 40-year-old butch.
Fourth division players.
It's things like that are just so clever. And it's also got what I think, and about you, I think the best World Cup theme that was never officially done ever for England. Oh, my head, son!
Nothing will top World in Motion or Three Lions, that's a close third. Tying third with Ant and Dex were on the ball.
True, yeah, true. Nothing's going to beat the Barnsley rap, is it? Let's be honest.
No.
I think, no, that's true. Okay. But yeah, it's a great film. So check out Steve's piece on it, guys, because Hopefully it'll make you go and watch the movie, which is honestly, I mean, if you're a football fan, you're really, really going to love it. But if you're not, watch it anyway.
It's difficult to track down now, but it is available in certain places online. But it is difficult to track down, unfortunately.
Is it as difficult to get as Dream Team?
No. Nothing is as difficult to track down as Dream Team. One day.
Scores then, predictions. Let's do, because once we come back, I think we'll have played a couple of games. So first two England games, predictions. Well, so we've got Tunisia first.
Yeah, a week today is the first England game, which is against Tunisia, and then the second one is
Sunday.
The second one is the following Sunday. So two England games before the next set of tape is recorded.
Yeah.
I think the way that the group has worked out, we're quite fortunate. We have Belgium, which is our toughest opponent, last.
Mm.
I think the first two games should be straightforward wins for us. I would say a comfortable 2-0 against Tunisia and even as much as a 4-1 against Panama, because the few bits I've seen of Panama, they do look pretty hopeless.
You're right, we should, but I just have flashbacks to, you know, was it Finland or Iceland?
I think it was
Iceland, yeah. Wasn't it? Oh my God, yeah. But you know, we no, surely it can't get any worse than that. He says. But yeah, we'll see. We'll be back in 2 weeks. We'll see if Steve got his predictions right. I'm gonna go for a 1-0 against Tunisia, because I think they'll come out the gate a little bit awkward and anxious. And I'm gonna say 3-0. Against Panama, so we'll see how we go, and then maybe Owen can put on the website somewhere what he thinks his scores are going to be or what's on. But yeah, back for that soon. But yeah, in terms of films as well, keep an eye on our website, because our roving reporter Dominic Hastings has been at the Telling Tales Festival in Manchester, and he's doing some write-ups this week about some of his adventures at this that took place over the previous weekend. This June, a really interesting blend of films, short films, and also audio projects that were going on in Manchester. So we were lucky enough to go there. So do check out his thoughts on that as well. TV then, and we're going to have a little chat about the biggest phenomenon on the box right now. But before that, I'm going to tease something for the next time I'm on, which is that we've got dropping very soon one of the first reviews of the second season of Luke Cage, Marvel's Defenders TV show, in the Defenders Netflix, you know, Marvel Cinematic Universe area. Because I've watched it. I managed to get the entire season, thank you Netflix, early. And I've gone through it. And I can't talk about it. There's an embargo until tomorrow, I think, as of the time you listen to this. But our review of the season, our general broad review of the season, will be out then. All I can say, without spoiling anything, is that it's really good. Have you seen season one of this, Steve? I don't know how much of a fan you are of the Marvel stuff.
I've not really got into the Marvel TV shows. Have we really got that much pull now that we can get stuff early off Netflix?
Well, yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't realise things were going so well in Set the Tape Towers.
Well, you know, sometimes it happens. We've been lucky so far. So yeah, cheers Netflix. Give us more things, please.
No, I've not really watched too much of the Marvel TV stuff. I watched the first series of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the first series of Daredevil, and it's one of those things I've never really kind of picked up on or got back into.
Yeah, it's one of them that's been a bit of a, I think it's been a bit hit and miss for some people, you know. Some of them are really good. Jessica Jones season one was great. I didn't love season one of Luke Cage, I'll be honest. But the second season's great, as I say. And the whole, you know, season one of Luke Cage has a real sort of swagger about it. You know, it's set in Harlem. It's about a, you know, a beefcake of a guy. And it's all, there's a lot of, you know, criminals involved, there's the police. You know, it's like a blaxploitation update, you know, for the modern day. It's got a brilliant soundtrack. There's so many, like, jazz, blues kind of stuff going on in there, rap, R&B. It's a really stylish and quite sexy show. And, you know, it's really good. So, you know, we'll, more thoughts on that very soon, guys. So check that out. Our Luke Cage exclusive review dropping very soon. But the other big hitter as well, we've got The Handmaid's Tale as well, which our reviewers Clara and Clara Cook and Kelechi Ehenulo are doing weekly, rotating. So keep an eye on those. I haven't watched those yet, so I haven't really got a lot to say about that. But our writer Kevin Ibbotson-White is reviewing Westworld Season 2, week by week, which you can find on the website. And we spoke about this a bit earlier, but you haven't seen Westworld yet, have you, Steve?
I have not, no.
It's, do you know anything about it? Do you know the gist?
Yeah, I know it's based on... Is it based on a novel?
It's based on a film.
Or an older... Yeah.
But it's by a novelist, so I can see where you were going there. Michael Crichton, so, yeah.
And who... Didn't he write Jurassic Park?
He did. He did write Jurassic Park.
There we go.
Park.
All
yeah.
ties in it's very nicely, isn't it?
Yeah.
and it's about... Isn't it about some kind of... Like a theme park where the animatronic people might... You know, real or have AI or something.
Mm. That's essentially the gist of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
In the old film,
I should write these kind of things. You know, synopsis for the back of for the films on Netflix or something like that on a back of DVD boxes.
Have you seen some of the like the descriptions on Netflix though? Because they're really mental. Like if you look at the you know what they say some things about, sometimes they are nothing like that movie or nothing like that TV show.
They always try and be really upbeat in them as well for some reason, even if it's like a horror slash film.
Yeah, they all die at the end, but don't worry, they have fun doing it, that kind of thing. Yeah, just you know. So God knows what they put about Westworld. It's not on Netflix, thankfully. But yeah, you've got the gist of it right, because Michael Crichton's, a lot of his stories are all about kind of, it's the same kind of story in a way as Jurassic Park, in that Jurassic Park it was that we created these dinosaurs and then, oh, you know, we thought we could create a theme park about them and, oh, actually, they're dinosaurs and they'll eat us. In this, it's the same gist in that in the near future they've created a theme park where you can turn up and you can experience all these different, you know, worlds. You know, in the old movies it was future world, there was medieval world, there was Roman world and there was Westworld, which is the Old West. And you can turn up and you can pretend, you can either be a cowboy, you can be a bad guy, you know, and you can, you sort of interact with the androids, or in this case, they're called hosts in this version of Westworld. And it plays out a story and you basically play that story. So it's a bit like being in a video game, but you're actually participating, you know, and everything's supposed to go to a particular storyline. But obviously in Westworld, the idea is, yeah, they rebel, they start to... The hosts, the robots, essentially, they start to get consciousness and they start to become self-aware and they start to realise that there is more to this and they're being abused and they're being victimised. And the show, I mean, the movie's quite sci-fi, 70s sort of pulp sci-fi, but the show is really complicated. I think you'd love it because you're a big fan of Lost, right?
Yeah.
And it is... It's not exactly the same storylines, but it treads such similar sort of waters. You know, Lost did all those episodes where you'd have a focus on one character and it'd go off down a rabbit hole there, or it would, you know, it'd have all these different intertwining, non-linear sort of storylines. So it'd flash back to this event and then you'd see, like, disoriented... You'd love that. You'd love it for that.
I think I would. I think it's probably because it's in the UK, it's on Sky. I don't have Sky. So if it was on... terrestrial television, or if it was on Netflix or Amazon Prime, then yeah, I'd have probably watched it by now. It's just because it's on like a medium that I don't have readily.
Yeah.
So,
but yeah. You know, yeah, and that is the thing. Yeah, you've got to have the Sky package to watch it. A bit like Game of Thrones, you know. But when they're on, I mean, the first season's on Blu-ray. Check it out, get it, because Kevin is doing these fantastic reviews for us on Set the Tape, which are really, really good, because there's so much to unpick in this second season, which has sort of gone in a bit of a different direction from season one, you know. And it's some people have been in love with it, some people haven't. The one that's just gone out this week, episode 8, is fantastic. The last two have been really great. The last one has been so fantastic. It's very Lost-like, because it takes a character who you haven't seen much of before and it does their story all the way through, and it weaves it all with all these different things we've all seen before. And it's just really layered and in-depth. It's got tons of themes to it. It's really, really well shot. It's quite graphic. It's quite gory. It's quite sexy. It's got brilliant soundtrack. It's just great, you know. And it's one of them you've got to pay attention. You've got to be locked in because there's so much to it, but it really is worth it.
So basically sexy robots.
Sexy robots. Yeah. Sexy robots and a lot of death. And if if I can't say you it with that, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's keep watching, keep checking out Kevin's reviews. We've got two more to go after this week, before the season's up. So we only get 10 a season, but it is coming back for a third season. So you know, check it out, guys, because it's pretty great. Free play then, finally. We're going to turn things over first. We're going to talk a little bit about music in this free play. So we're going to turn things over first to our roving musical maestro, Matt Latham, for a little bit of a two-minute update. So away you go, Mr. Latham.
He's back once again with the Renegade Master. I'm Matthew Latham. You're listening to The Cassette Tape. And this week, I'm going to make you a playlist. It'll only take about half an hour of your time to have a listen to. It's a millennial equivalent of a mixtape for those of the slightly older persuasion who might not be sure what a playlist is. But Matthew, what is on the first cassette tape playlist, 01 playlist? I'm glad you asked, fictional person. All it is a few select songs from a few albums that I've been listening to quite a lot over the course of this year so far. It opens up with Serial cassette tape podcasty bit preferer person, Natalie Prass with Oh My. Her album came out earlier a few weeks ago. We have Wait It Out by Happy Accidents from Everything But The Here And There, which could potentially be my album of the year so far. We've got the song Miracle by Churches from their Love Is Dead album, which came out at the same time as Natalie Prass. And if I'm honest, the Love Is Dead album I am listening to is a lot. And again, contender for my favourite album of the year so far. Frank Turner, someone I perhaps mentioned as well in an earlier episode, their song Little Changes, which has probably his best video yet, where he's attempting to dance and just feeling very uncomfortable. Too Young to Care by Anna Birch's Quit the Curse album is another great song. It's a great album for Saw Alive at the start of May. Brilliant songstress, brilliant songwriter. We got Lonely Tourist from Smells Like Teen Meeting from his Remuneration album. He's perhaps one of the best songwriters ever made, and he just makes everything else look insignificant in comparison. If you've not heard The Ballad of Paul Tierney, which is basically a guy with his same name as Lonely Tourist's real name, and he just talks about this footballer's life all the way through and his unsuccessful career, it's a fantastic song. It is, feels so down, so dapper, but it is one of the more positive, upbeat songs you'll ever listen to. The Regrets Come Through is like a great little motivational, yeah, kick-ass song. Grace Van Der Kun with Reveries is another song from a album which I think could also be my favourite album this year. There's quite a few so far, and it just took me out of surprise. It's a brilliant album. Mediocre at Best is not a mediocre at best song from an album called Seatbelts for Aeroplanes by an artist called Brand New Friend, who might be your brand new friends after listening to what is a great album. And not from an album, actually, but a song that was released just before I saw them live. The song is called Moon by the artist Dude York, who I absolutely love to bits. The fast forward for this edition is going towards the June 15th release of Mike Shinoda's album Post Traumatic, an album that expands on the three-song EP with the same name from January. It's an album that explores his grief over the suicide of his friend and Linkin Park bandmate Chester Bennington. He's actually stated that it's a journey out of grief of darkness rather than one of into grief of darkness. I am very interested to hear how the album turns out. So until next time, keep listening, people.
Cheers, Latham, for that. That was really good. And we're going to continue the musical theme by talking about something that I've been going to, because we've got a nice little contact at the Royal Albert Hall in London, one of the most prestigious music venues in the world. And they keep sending us tickets to go to free concerts, orchestral concerts, where you watch a movie and you have a live orchestra playing it at the same time. And this week, we've got Close Encounters of the Third Kind. We've got Clara going to see that, and then she's going to report back on it. We've got Gladiator coming up as well, which I think Clara's going to as well later in the month. And later in the year, I'm going to see
Weekend at Bernie's.
Oh, do you know what? No, I couldn't get tickets for that one. If only they did that. I'm going to see Jurassic Park, would you believe, with a live orchestra. And I saw for my birthday present, which was last weekend, I went to see both Star Trek and Star Trek Beyond with a live orchestra as well, which was brilliant, over 2 days. So we had a nice weekend in London. But have you ever been to any of these, Steve? Or would you go to any of these kind of live movie screenings with an orchestra?
I would. I had never have been. I certainly would for the right kind of film. As the problem is with me, I live nowhere near London where all these things happen. Mm. And but you know, for the right kind of film, then yeah, I'd be there in a flash.
What kind of film would you want to go and see, do you think? What's your idea for a movie?
Something that's got a good score to it that would work with an orchestra well. I mean, there's something, Star Wars, I think, would probably work. It's got a great soundtrack.
Mm. Yeah.
Anything that John Williams has done a soundtrack for or a score for. Yeah, I'm not like the biggest soundtrack person, which is why I never sort of do the articles on soundtracks or scores, but anything that does have a big kind of orchestral score would be great to see in that kind of environment.
Yeah, they're doing Star Wars, the original trilogy. I think it's countrywide, so you never know. It might be somewhere a bit more accessible for you, I think. I'm sure they're doing it in more than just London. And they're going through and they're going to do all the original trilogy, which would be amazing. I really want to get myself to them. They're really good. They're really fun experiences. They don't just do them in the Royal Albert Hall. The Royal Albert Hall is a fantastic venue, and they're very kind, giving us tickets for this kind of thing. And it's just every time you go there, it's just a bit of a gasp moment because it's so brilliantly done and it's seamless. Yeah. But they do them all over the place. You know, they do them in a lot of Birmingham, where I live. You know, at the Symphony Hall and things like that. And they do them in a lot of cities now. They've got a lot of this going on because it is pretty popular these days.
Yeah, I can imagine it's a sort of a good seller for film fans. I imagine it kind of brings the people in through the door. It's certainly like an interesting concept to have the live orchestra there.
It makes you see. I mean, I saw the Star Trek 09 again, and I've seen that film so many times, you know, because I'm a big fan of Star Trek. But when you watch it with an orchestra, you know, and it's a brilliant film for that kind of thing, you kind of see it in a different way. You know, we both came out of it, me and my partner came out of it and went, you know, we loved that film. We already liked that film, but we loved that film this time around. So it just brings it out. So I think if you saw Star Wars, you'd be, you know, on your knees by the end of it, I think. just be the best thing ever, really. And I think Jurassic Park will be really good.
Yeah, I'd imagine that would work well.
In September. So I will report back on that then. But yeah, if you ever get a chance, Steve, do it. Definitely. And if there's anywhere near where you are, we'll try and get you some free tickets.
Sounds good.
That'd be all right, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Free stuff. Given, you know, we're high rollers now. We've got Netflix on our side. Yeah. So, you know.
Never turn down a freebie.
Never. That's episode 12 in the bag. Thanks, as always, for joining us for more ramblings. Don't forget to check out all of our articles and reviews on www.setthetape.com. Follow us on Facebook by liking our page, on Twitter by following @SetTheTape, and if you could leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, that would be even more wonderful. So until next time, have a good one.